In case you haven't gotten your Easter meal all planned, we have invited the wonderful Lydia Bastianich to suggest some ways to add an Italian twist to the festivities. Lydia was here last to talk about her book, Lydia's Favorite Recipes from Knopf, and she's just published her second children's book called Nana's Birthday Surprise. That's with Running Press. I'm very pleased that you could join us today for the fifth of our Food Fridays. Hi.
Hi. My pleasure.
Now, do you have your meal planned for Sunday?
I do. I mean, it's more or less, you know, it's always lamb and roasted lamb with spring potatoes, and it's all about the spring. Fava beans and all, but rack of lamb, roasted baby lamb, all those kind of things, and whatever's in spring.
And that is generally the way Easter dinner would be throughout most of Italy? Because in this country, the alternative is ham.
Yeah, it's spring. It's spring. It's just about lamb. You know what other substitute could be for lamb? Rabbit.
Mm-hmm.
Rabbit. But it's very springy and but lamb is kind of the tradition.
Now, how many people will be at your table?
We'll be 12.
And do you make all the dishes, or do you invite others to cook with you?
No, it's my daughter, myself, my sister-in-law, my mother is there. So it's the family. But, you know, everybody chips in. But I kind of, you know, I'm kind of the conductor of the symphony here.
Well, you also have Easter dinners on your restaurants. Can't you just invite everyone to come to one of your restaurants?
I could, and we do that sometimes. But there's something about, you know, we make a little Easter egg hunt in the yard. And there's something about also being home, you know, and because I'm in the restaurant every day.
Could you tell us about one special Easter tradition that involves a handkerchief?
Well, that's going back when I was a little girl. And, you know, this children's book is all about those stories when I was a little girl. And we would go for Easter. We would go early in the morning with my grandmother to church. And, you know, big holidays are kind of in preparation of. There's the big egg bread, you know, that kind of, it's almost like the challah, you know, it's the twist, but it's every kind of culture has it in its own way. And that gets done a day or two before. And the boiled eggs and, you know, the vegetables. So we would go to church in the morning and grandma would take a piece of the bread. She would take some scallions, some boiled eggs, and she would tie it in a beggar's purse, if mm-hmm. you will, a tablecloth or something that was clean. And but it wasn't only her. That was a tradition. A lot of the women came. And at the end of the Mass, when the blessing came, they all walked up to the altar and lined up, opened up this handkerchief or tablecloth and exposed the goods there, and they would get blessed. And then we would take them home, put them on the table, add some salt, some slices of prosciutto. Grandpa would cut whatever, and of course he would have his little vino there. And we would eat this blessed food, and we would thank, I guess, God for having these provisions and hoping that it's a good year that will provide a lot of food for the family.
Well, you grew up in the northeastern corner of Italy, and Italy does have very regional approaches to food. Would those sorts of things have been traditions all throughout the country?
I don't know. You see, I think, you know, eggs and bread and scallions and some sort of a blessing is a tradition throughout Italy.
And eggs, of course, are also a major part of the Passover meal, because we're talking about spring and birth or rebirth.
Regeneration, you know, of plenty of food for everybody.
So you pretty much make the same dishes every year. Do you ever try something new, introduce something new? Because you're constantly researching the different foods of Italy.
I do, but, you know, there's something about tradition and family and passing it on and having a constant. And so lamb is always there. The spring potato is always there. They're seasoned with rosemary, all the time. I think what I will do different even this year is that I will make a little cherry and balsamic sauce with a little bit of mustard. Just braise them, you know, kind of. And that's the, my grandmother didn't do that. So that's a new intro on my. But
not, and you've provided us with that recipe, which we have on our website, WNYC.org. You use dried cherries?
You can use fresh or dry cherries. I think dry cherries, they're more intense and, you know, maybe you still, maybe it's early now, March is early, but fresh cherries are delicious with some balsamic vinegar, some honey, some mustard seeds in there, and you just kind of perk it away on the, and it makes this delicious sauce. And all you need is one or two cherries, pieces of cherries next to the lamb chops with a little bit of sauce, and it's just delicious.
It's kind of a sweet and sour sauce.
Exactly, exactly.
And must it be white mustard seeds? Because I've always wondered whether I must use white pepper other than for aesthetics.
But there are
dishes.
Nuances. There are nuances in taste, in pepper as well as in mustard seeds, the intensity of kind of the bite. So there are, I mean, you know, the pink pepper is much more aromatic. So, but whatever you have kind of works. You know, sometimes must in the kitchen is not whatever you have, you come close to it and it works.
And the same would apply to the bay leaves. You say fresh bay leaves. Well, it's not always easy to get fresh bay leaves, but you can always find dried bay leaves.
It's fine. Yeah, absolutely. They're less intense, so you have to use a little more. The one thing about bay leaves, dry bay leaves, you have to be careful that they crack and then they become quite dangerous. You know, they get stuck, lodged in your the throat.
You have to take them out of every dish.
Make sure that they don't break and that you take them out.
And this goes well with lamb?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. The rosemary with the lamb meat, and then the bay leaves in with the balsamic. Now, these are such easy recipes, you know, because the lamb chops, all you do, you get the lamb chops, you're on the rack and you cut it, or you have your butcher do it, and then you marinate them with a little garlic and rosemary and olive oil, and then you just sear them in a pan, in a hot skillet, or on a grill, and you have your sauce on the side, and it's done. But the side dish is what's delicious.
Now, you would marinate them for a couple of hours, or you could put them in the refrigerator for a while. But if you put them in the refrigerator, do you have to take them out and let them return to room temperature?
I think because it's a question on you know, the cooking element. So sometimes if you like them really rare, being a little chilled is good so that you cook the outside and the inside kind of slowly cooks and becomes rare. Now, if you like it more on the medium and juicy and whatever, I think it's meat is always best cooked, grilled at least at room temperature.
Well, if you're putting them on a cast iron pan, should you put a little olive oil down or butter?
No. You have the chops themselves are marinating olive oil. So, you know, a nice seasoned pan.
And how do you know when they're done?
Well, you know, you can touch them and I can tell, but you get a nice crisp on the outside. So, you know, pushing with your finger even depends on how much they bounce. The more they bounce, the rarer they are. So, but, you know, that's something that you have to gauge and depend on the size of the chops.
A chef once told me that a way to test whether meat is cooked well is to feel the space between your thumb and your first finger, and if the meat feels the same way, it's okay.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it is that bounce back, that you're looking.
And you've given us that recipe. Also, an unusual kind of asparagus and scallion frittata. It's not what I usually think of when I think of frittata.
It's spring. My grandparents used to make it all the time. And it's one of the recipes that I include also in this children's book, which is about the four seasons. You know, my five grandchildren, when they come over to the house, they always pile up. And they said, Grandma, tell me a story when you were a little girl. So yeah, I thought that the four seasons are so important. And spring brings, you know, those wonderful asparagus, the scallions. Now, we have these all year round, but there's something about eating in season. And so if you have some great eggs, organic eggs, it's so simple and so delicious.
And you want big curds, you say.
Yeah, I like it. I like to sort of squish around the eggs so they form kind of, don't break it up. You know, I like the big curds of the eggs.
And you have big, thick slices of either prosciutto or bacon, and then you cook the vegetables in the fat from them?
Yes. You put in the prosciutto. And this was, you know the last part of the prosciutto, when you go buy the prosciutto, the slice, so the last kind of stub of the prosciutto. And that's a great sort of tip to buy because it's cheap, because prosciutto can be expensive. You buy that, you clean off the skin. You can use the skin to oil your grill. And then all that meat that's left in there, you cut it fine, and it's great for frittata and for pastas.
Do you recommend the same sort of thing with bacon ends?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I love all of those things that, we can't use that.
Well, we've talked earlier about sticking the rind from cheeses into soups.
Absolutely. Actually, there is in Emilia-Romagna soup that it's a Parmigiano soup. And it's all made out of the rinds of the grated cheese, and then you make this luscious soup.
I can't imagine anything more delicious than anything that has to do with Parmesan cheese. Mm-hmm. You also gave us a recipe for scafata.
Scafare is kind of a slang verb, Roman, which means shelling. And this is all the vegetables that are in spring, so fresh peas, fresh favas. I put in there, onions, the spring onions. I put the little zucchini just for the outer leaves of lettuces, the tougher ones. All you braise it in olive oil with a little peperoncino, a touch of mint, and it is, I mean, it's like eating spring.
Do you need to peel the favas?
Of course. Yeah, you peel it.
Yeah, and then you also throw in zucchini.
I diced a little bit of zucchini. I chopped up a few leaves of mint and all the tough outer leaf or a salad. So, you know, if you're doing this big dinner, you want to have also salad, the tough leaves go into this kind of, it's like a ratatouille, but it's all green and it's all spring and it's delicious.
And you've also given us an Easter bread made with a lot of eggs and dark rum.
Yeah. Rum was of course, it's not indigenous to it. But those, the vanilla or that, those were the special elements. You know, I come close to Venice. And Venice was, Venice, La Serenissima, became big because of its trade, its spice trades. So up there, we have a lot of the spices. We use cloves, we use cinnamon a lot, we use all of these rum and whatever. But it's not indigenous. And those things signify to us that it's a holiday because spices were expensive. But we use them on special days.
And you make a note that it requires some understanding of leavening and bread making.
Bread making is very special. You really get to have to know the feel. You have to give it an opportunity for the fibers to kind of open up and lighten up, and between the heat, the risings, and all of that. So yeah, bread is a little, and especially this Easter bread, which has a lot of eggs, could be heavy. So you have to be careful how it rises. Give it sometimes even 2-3 risings.
Sometimes just a little bit too much water or too little water can really affect whether the bread is a success or a failure.
The temperature of the water, you know, when you put the yeast, do you kill some of those yeast molecules or whatever? So yeah, absolutely.
And the humidity in the air?
Everything.
What about that kind of bread? It's quite rich. How long will it last without being refrigerated?
Oh, we used to have it for weeks. I mean, 2 weeks at least. Grandma would tie it, and of course they had no plastic, but she would tie it in clean towels, kitchen towels and whatever. And they had a cupboard, you know, where bread was kept, and it stood fine.
Do you freeze bread?
Yes, absolutely. You can freeze bread. Bread freezes very well.
My guest is Lidia Bastianich. We are talking about some recipes that she has supplied us with, recipes that we could celebrate the Easter holiday with. Her latest book for grown-ups is Lydia's Favorite Recipes, published by Knopf. But she also has a new book for children, your second, called Nana's Birthday Surprise. It's from Running Press. We have another recipe also for chocolate bread parfait on our show page.
Yes, that's...
Well, you've given us a whole meal.
Yes, it doesn't require any baking, and it's a delicious recipe, and kids can assemble it. So think about, you know, leftover bread, good bread, could be this egg bread or whatever, and, you know, it could be 4 or 5 days old. You melt some chocolates, you put some coffee leftover coffee in there. If it's for adults, a little bit of coffee liqueur, and you soak the bread in that. And then you make some whipped cream and you toast some slivers of almonds and you just pile it up like a parfait. These slices of bread soaked with chocolate and coffee, then a little whipped cream, then a little almonds and so on. And it is delicious. There's something about bread and chocolate that's, you know, that's very basic but very gratifying.
Now, what about the kids' book? This is your second children's book. Are they a fun way of having a break from doing all the other things you do?
But you know what? Because I see how much my children enjoy it, and even though they're growing, they still want to hear the stories. They want to be connected, and I think that today's children, they're actually missing that connection to nature, to the seasons. You know, they don't know how to relate what food is in what season. And in order for them to be nourished properly, to nourish themselves properly, to respect the planet that we live in, they need to understand these rhythms. So it's one way, simplistically in a way, but to begin children to think about it and ultimately cook, get in the kitchen.
And in this book, you have them plan a special dinner for your mother. Now, well, I'm assuming your mother was a pretty good cook.
Yeah, she was. She was. Her mother was even better. Grandma used to, Nonna Rosa. My mother now is 93, and she lives still with me. Just before I came down, we had coffee together. One of my grandchildren, Miles, was sleeping over. And so, you know, this book, all of the children are real, are mine. All of the names are real, you know, so even the cat and the dog, everybody is our family.
And so this is almost an autobiographical children's book.
It is. Sharing this special moments that I was blessed with, you know, growing up in with nature.
Now, some kids are really interested in what is being done in the kitchen. Others don't care. I'm assuming that your son, Joe, paid a lot of attention, considering the fact that he's gone into the restaurant business.
I thought, Leonard, him as well as my daughter, Tanya, and I actually kind of told them, you know, this is not the business you want to get in, because when I went in 1971, this was a rough business. You worked a lot in the kitchen and, you know, you didn't get all the accolades coming out or whatever. Yes.
It was pre-celebrity chef or just on the cusp.
Exactly. So we were immigrants. What was important to us was that they get their education. And they did. You know, Joe, master's in business, went down to Wall Street. Tanya ultimately got her PhD from Oxford in Renaissance art history. And you know what? They both came back. So even though I pushed them away, they came back because, you know, they grew into it. They were growing up with all of this.
Listeners have been writing in with questions for you. Lorraine from Highland Mills wrote on our show page to ask if you have a local source for Italian products infused with lemon and or black pepper. She can't get enough of them, and she's from Naples, and that is kind of standard fare there.
What infused the lemon?
She says Italian products infused with lemon and or black pepper.
Yeah, well, Naples, yeah, lemons, they're the best. I think, you know, maybe she should look for Meyer's lemon when they're in season, and they
just do it herself.
Yeah, they're the closest, the aromatic kind of citrus flavor that she's looking at. And, you know, you just have to do it. I do it on my... Actually, lemons, you know, even when you cook, you put a few gratings or a leaf, it just freshens everything up. When you bake, grate some orange, lemons, put it in. When you roast, I put roasted chicken with lemon slices. Absolutely. You know, sautéed fish, lemon slices. Just incorporate it. You know, even if the recipe doesn't say so, you know, incorporate it. And I can really relate to her because there's such a pronounced cuisine of lemons in Campania.
Although I just recently had something lamb infused with lemon, and I thought that it almost destroyed the lamb. I want the taste of the lamb. But lemon is so great with chicken or fish, where the flavors are more subtle.
Yeah, it's a question of quantity, you know. But also, I would tell her, you know, go to Italy, you know, our store on Fifth Avenue and 23rd Street. We have, 40% or 50% of the products that we sell there are a first-time imports, so...
Now, Julgo wrote in to say that the segment is making him homesick. His mother always made the twisted bread with eggs interweaved that got hard cooked in the oven for breakfast and for dessert, ricotta pie.
Absolutely. The ricotta impastata with all the candied fruits and all that. And that's, again, something that you can make in advance. And it's a big pie. It has a nice crust. And, it could last 2-3 days into the holiday.
So what will you be offering in Falidia, for example?
Is there especially the
same dishes that we've been talking about?
Yes, all of these. And also, you know, because as you say, we kind of will celebrate all of the different regions. So Lombardia, maybe we'll have some risotto, but if you go down in Campania, they have the impastata. In Sicily, they have the pasta with the eggplants and boiled eggs and so on. So we will kind of a combination. It'll be like a meal, a great appetizer, then 2 or 3 pastas, family style, and then the roasted meats. Lamb will be one of them, but we'll also have chicken, so at the family style.
Are you surprised by how varied the foods of Italy are? I mean, we're talking about a small country, and yet in the south you have food that tastes so totally different from the middle and then the north and from where you are, from Friuli. Again, different, I guess, because of the Middle Eastern influences there.
Leonard.
But it's just amazing to me that such a small country can have the equivalent of like 10 national cuisines.
Absolutely. Never ceases to amaze me, you know, because I travel 3-4 times a year there and always discover something new. And Italy is about half the size of California. It has 20 regions, and every region is so different in itself. But that's the beauty of Italy, the mosaic that is Italy.
Now, Lidia Bastianich's children's book is called Nana's Birthday Surprise, and it's illustrated by Renee Griff and published by Running Press. And, of course, there are all the cooking shows on television and a bunch of cookbooks, the last one being Lydia's Favorite Recipes, which is published by Knopf. And is there
Lydia's,
something I've left out?
Well, you know, if they want to refresh their mind on all of this, is www.lydiasitaly.com.
And you can also find the recipes we've been discussing on our show page at wnyc.org. Thank you so much for being with us
again. Thank you, Leonard. Happy holidays.